In this session, I'd like to focus a little bit more on the last two of these four immeasurables. So we've already looked at loving kindness and compassion in a little bit of detail previously. I'd like to, in this session, have a look at these two, understand what they are in a little bit more detail, and we'll do a meditation on equanimity in this session. And then tomorrow morning, I'd like to do a meditation on empathetic joy. But actually, to begin, what I'd like to do is to begin with a meditation on dealing with anger, because I had planned to do that yesterday, but we got into quite a lot of discussion about this cognitive fusion, so we didn't have any time. So I'd like to now begin this session by doing a short meditation on some methods for dealing with anger, because I think it can be very important and helpful to us. So let's do that first before we go into these two topics of empathetic joy and equanimity. So finding a nice, comfortable posture. So we begin, as always, with preparing the body, setting it into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. And allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Preparing the mind, setting it in a state of ease and relaxation. Bringing the mind into the present moment. Through focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body.
let's now have a look at some ways of dealing with anger. And when we apply antidotes to anger, we're not trying to suppress the anger, but rather we're trying to look at the situation in a different way so that the anger simply dissolves. So first think of a situation where you got angry or frustrated when something didn't work out the way you wanted it to. And picture the scene very clearly. And then ask yourself, could I have done something about that situation? If we can do something to change a situation, then there's no need to get angry. You simply make the change. And if there's nothing we can do to change a situation, what's the use in getting angry? It doesn't help. Now think of a situation where you got angry when someone else criticized you. Again, picture the scene clearly. And then ask yourself, was their criticism valid? If what they said was true, why get angry? Because they are giving us the chance to correct our mistakes and faults and to improve ourselves. And if what they said was untrue, since they're completely mistaken, there's no reason to get angry. We can simply ignore what they say. And regardless of whether their criticism was valid or not, they are providing us the opportunity to to develop the quality of patience. So in fact, they're being very kind to us. Now think of a situation where you got angry in a conflict with another person. And again, picture the scene very clearly. Now, instead of looking at the situation from your own perspective, assume the perspective of the other person. Try to imagine how the situation would look to them. When we try to understand their viewpoint, we can see that they're just like us, in wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. And that due to their confusion and mental afflictions, they are just creating suffering for themselves and for those around them. And in this way, by distinguishing the person from their behavior, we can begin to develop compassion for them. And if their behavior is inappropriate, we can address that bad behavior without attacking the person, without getting angry. Now think of a situation where you often get irritated or frustrated. And allow some irritation or frustration to arise. Now instead of focusing on the situation, look directly at the irritation or frustration itself. Don't try to push it away. Simply observe it. What is the nature of this irritation or frustration? Is it something solid and concrete? Or is it constantly changing? when we look in this way, it simply dissolves. Now think of a person who makes you irritated. And then mentally dissect the person and try to pinpoint exactly what it is that makes you irritated. Is it something that they say that irritates you? If so, then these words are just sounds. So which particular sound is irritating? Or perhaps it's something that they do that is irritating. If so, actions are simply movements of the body. So which particular movement is irritating? Or perhaps it's simply their appearance which is irritating. If so, appearances are simply collections of colours and shapes. So which particular colour or shape is irritating? From this sort of investigation, we can see that it is us that is creating the irritating person. By interpreting the situation in a certain way, and then applying a label of annoying or irritating. And then we go on to mistake our concept of the person for the person themselves. We see them as inherently irritating. So in conclusion, recognize that by engaging in these sorts of reflections and relating them to situations in our life, we can clear up a lot of anger and frustration. And we can develop a more healthy way of looking at things. And make a strong determination to do so. Any questions about that meditation before we look at empathetic joy and equanimity? The last point, yes. So, we need to be very careful when we say things like that, you know. Often when we get into this idea of emptiness, people sort of interpret that to mean like nothing really exists and fall to the extreme of nihilism. So the two extremes are grasping onto things existing independently, and the other extremes is nothing exists. Because emptiness is undermining the fact that things exist independently. And for us now, there seems to be just two possibilities. Either there is this real, independent, functioning world, or there's no world, because we don't see any other possibility. So often what happens is when we investigate this supposed independent world that seems to be there, and we come to realize there is no independent world, we simply flip to the other extreme and go, oh, no world at all, nothing really exists. So that's the nihilistic view. So that's the great challenge in developing this cognitive balance, is to really find the middle way. You know, in Buddhism there's a philosophical school called Majjhimika, which means middle way. We're trying to find that middle way between these two extremes of grasping onto independent things and grasping onto the fact nothing exists. In itself, yes, that everything is interdependent. Everything depends on other factors. Therefore, here in this anger meditation, the person, we are creating the angry person by giving a label, but then, of course, we believe that that person is in itself angry. It's existing, he's angry from his own side. And like you said, we can also apply the same reasoning to ourselves. That's another way to dissipate anger, is not only investigate the person in terms of anger, but we can examine ourselves. You know, who is this me here who is getting angry? And if we do that investigation, which is a wisdom investigation of a vipassana practice, then we can dissipate the anger as well, because anger can only be there if we are grasping onto me, independent me, or independent other person. So that was one of the points in this meditation. And the anger itself, yes. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So we can, in the wisdom approach to anger, we can investigate the agent, the object, or the actual action, the actual anger itself. All of those three are good points of investigation in terms of the wisdom approach to anger. Of course, that's not the only approach to dealing with anger as we saw here. One is the mindfulness approach, is simply observe the anger arise and pass. So we can apply mindfulness, we can apply wisdom, we can apply patience, we can apply compassion, we can apply all of these approaches. And therefore, if we have these multiple different approaches, then we can use them if and when we feel each one is more effective than the other. So we have a number of various approaches to dealing with anger, in terms of simple, pure mindfulness, in terms of compassion, in terms of patience, in terms of wisdom. All of these are approaches to working with anger. Sure. Right. Exactly. Instead of reactions, they become responses. Exactly. So here in this meditation, we are reprogramming ourselves to see the situation in a different way. Of course, if we just go through this intellectually, it can make sense. So we can have an intellectual appreciation that these points are valid. But as you said, this is not going to help us a lot in daily life because we react. It's only afterwards we go, oh, okay, I should have done this. Whereas if we start to internalize some of these reflections through reflecting on them, internalize them so that they become an instinctive way of seeing things, then in daily life, instinctively, instead of reacting, instinctively we will see things in these better, correct ways. So that's the purpose of trying to internalize these ideas so that instinctively, when someone is, normally if someone is saying something harsh to us, instinctively we get angry. But this reflection here of, instead of focusing on ourselves, focus on the other person. You know, they also want to be happy. They believe through their confusion and mental afflictions this type of speech is going to make them happy, but we can see that's just making them miserable and other people miserable. So if we can really start to internalize that, what you will find in daily life is that when we're confronted with such a person, instead of being focused on me and I don't like that, we'll instinctively focus on that person and we'll feel some empathy and compassion for that person, seeing that they're really just screwing up their own lives and the lives of the people around them. So that's how these meditations can work. Yes, so again, physical harm, let's say instead of verbal harm, it's physical harm. So again, if it's physical harm or verbal harm, usually we react with anger. So again, if it's physical harm, we can have the same perspective and see that they're just messing up their lives and the people around them. And with compassion, instead of anger, we would then restrain that person because we can see that they're just damaging themselves and damaging us or damaging other people. So through that strong instinctive compassion, we respond using physical force if we need to restrain the person. Normally, of course, if we get angry, we overreact. We use excessive force and then the whole thing escalates out of control. So then instinctively use compassion, and that instinctive compassion can be very forceful if necessary, and use physical force if necessary to restrain that person. Yeah, I saw a thing very recently which seemed very effective, where they had this situation where they had in the hall, they actually got a couple of kids who were very much bullied, and then the teacher was acting as a moderator, and he was moderating this discussion, which all the kids were there, including the ones that were bullying. And really it was a very, very powerful approach that he used, and I think that, you know, a lot of the kids obviously saw that bullying was not a good thing to do, and then even I think the ones who were bullying sort of really started to feel like, well, you know, this is not really a good thing. So this was very, very powerful. And I think it was because it was really touching on the point rather than just leaving it as some sort of intellectual exercise. So I think this can be very, very helpful, this sort of approach. And then, of course, often when people are being victimized, you know, then we need to somehow get them to feel good about themselves, but at the same time try to get them to not tolerate that bullying behavior in whatever way. Because often they instead, and of course if they react out of anger or something, then that doesn't work either. So that's it's two things that we need to get them to feel good about themselves and then try to respond in a good way to that. And then I think if they can bring that out more into the open, particularly involving the kids who are bullying, then I think they can really have a strong impact on the kids that are actually doing the bullying to make them feel like this is really not an appropriate behaviour. It's control. Yes, I mean, anger is really a sign of weakness. And it's a sign that we need to try to be in control. And it's because we don't really feel good about ourselves. And that's why we get angry at others. So if we can rather work on compassion, then actually we will be in control. It's the need to control that often causes the anger. And that will lead to more feeling out of control. Rather, if we develop the compassion, then we will be in control. Colors and patterns. No, what I was saying was that, you know, if we see someone who irritates us, what exactly is it that irritates us? Because we think it's there. There's something there that's irritating me. But, you know, maybe it's their appearance. Maybe it's just the way they look is irritating us. But if it's the way they look, it's their appearance is simply a collection of colours and shapes. So, therefore, which colour or shape is irritating? So, this particular point was to show that there's nothing irritating from the side of the person. There's nothing irritating there. We create the irritating person by interpreting the situation in a certain way. And by understanding that, we can overcome the irritation or anger. Right. I mean, the first point, of course, is that, you know, I mean, of course, it's not so easy for a child, but, I mean, the reason we feel bad is we accept what they say. I mean, do we have to accept what they say? No. I mean, it's just, I mean, literally, when someone's teasing us, I mean, it's just sounds hitting the eardrum. That's all that's happening, isn't it? There's nothing more than that. But we interpret it in a certain way and we grasp onto that. So we actually create the suffering ourselves by having that aversion to these sounds. We're interpreting in a certain way. So actually, it's up to us whether or not we suffer in that situation. We don't have to suffer. We can just simply not accept what they say. We can ignore what they say. Of course, to train a child to do that is not so easy. But of course, then reacting out of anger is, of course, going to probably make the situation worse. So we, again, to try and to make the child feel good about themselves, and then as part of that, to help the child to respond into that without responding with anger. That's all. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, in fact, for someone who's bullying, it's hard for them to continue bullying if they don't see some impact on the person who's being bullied. So if the person who's being bullied is not accepting it, they'll probably give up because there's nothing, they're not getting anything out of it. So that's also going to be helpful in terms of the person who's bullying. They're not going to continue to do it because they're trying to stimulate some sort of reaction out of the child. And if the child is not reacting, then they're probably just going to give up. Again, I think it's just to highlight to the child who's bullying that this is very harmful and that it, for the other, and that they wouldn't like to be bullied themselves either. Okay, let's move on. Oh, yes, last question. How will a child... Sure. And fortunately, there are a lot of initiatives now in terms of bringing these sorts of systems of education into... I mean, it's a disaster. I mean, our education system does not prepare children for the world. I mean, all it does, like you said, is prepare them to make money or to have some sort of job, but it doesn't emotionally and mentally and cognitively prepare a child in any way, really. And so fortunately there are now a lot of initiatives and a lot of things coming into the education system slowly, you know, in terms of mindfulness and so forth. So slowly this is coming in now, and it's going to take time, but it's long overdue. Okay, let's have a look now at the last two of these four immeasurables. So remember, the loving kindness or maitri and metta is simply the wish for ourselves and others to be happy, or in terms of immeasurable loving kindness, is the wish for all living beings to have happiness and its causes. Whereas compassion, immeasurable compassion, is the wish for all living beings to be free of suffering and its causes. Empathetic joy is a rejoicing in our own and others' virtues. Again, this is something very important in our modern society because we have so much focus on the negative that it's very important for us to focus on the positive. That when we or someone else does something virtuous or has some good fortune, good result, to really rejoice in that. So immeasurable empathetic joy is often described as, may all sentient beings never be separated from their happiness. So this is a rejoicing again in our own and others' good deeds and good fortune. And it's a very good antidote as well to jealousy, of course. And we're going to do a little bit of a meditation on this tomorrow morning. So now I'd like to focus on equanimity, which we already looked at briefly before. So let's just summarize this again before we do a short meditation on it. So again, equanimity, or upeksha in Sanskrit, and I think in Pali, upekha, is a mind of impartiality. It's an unbiased attitude towards others. As I already mentioned, now we have a very biased attitude towards others. We tend to have attachment to friends because they seem to be the source of our happiness. We often have apathy to strangers because they don't seem to affect us in any way. And we often have aversion, hostility, anger, or hatred towards the difficult people, the so-called enemy, because they seem to be interfering with my happiness. So this is the biased attitude that we're trying to overcome. And we're trying to overcome that by understanding that we are all equal in wanting to be happy, wanting to be free of suffering. We're all in the same situation. We're all striving to be happy, to be free of suffering. And through that sort of understanding, we can develop a sense of closeness to everyone. We're all in the same situation. We're all equal in wanting to be happy, wanting to be free of suffering. And so if we can develop that sense of closeness, that equal attitude towards others, then we can cultivate empathetic joy, loving kindness and compassion towards all living beings as the basis in that. So often then the immeasurable equanimity is often listed as something like, may all beings have equanimity that is free of attachment to friends and aversion to the enemy. Or the long one is, may they have an equanimity free of attachment to friends, apathy to strangers, and aversion or hostility or anger or hatred towards the so-called enemy. So this is what's called immeasurable equanimity. And we're going to do a short meditation on cultivating this quality of equanimity now. Before we do that, any questions about any of these 4 points? Okay, so let's do that meditation on cultivating equanimity. And then after, there's a one more thing I want to discuss about these 4 immeasurables that I think can be very helpful. But let's do the meditation first. So again, finding a nice, comfortable posture. So it's an act of loving kindness for yourself. Allow your awareness to descend into the body, becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. Using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. Allowing the breathing to flow naturally and effortlessly. Each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen. Simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Through focusing on the sensations of the breath, throughout the body. Let's now reflect and cultivate this quality of equanimity. So remember, equanimity is a mind of impartiality towards others, not having attachment to friends, aversion or hatred towards those who you find difficult, and not being apathetic or indifferent to so-called strangers. It's equanimity that allows loving kindness and compassion to expand out boundlessly. Normally these qualities are mixed with attachment, but we grow beyond attachment as we realize that every living being is equally worthy of finding happiness and freedom from suffering. So first bring to mind the person who you know well, but is neither a friend nor someone who you dislike. And picture them very clearly in front of you. They are just like yourself in wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. Now shift your focus and assume the perspective of the other person and view the world through their eyes, looking back at yourself. Their yearning for happiness is identical to your own. And even though they're not close to you, their happiness is no less significant than the happiness of a loved one. Now next bring to mind a person who you feel is crucial to your happiness, to your well-being, a person for whom you both have affection and attachment. And again, picture them very clearly in front of you. And again, shift your perspective and take the viewpoint of that person. They are just like yourself in having qualities and defects. They have their own hopes, fears, and desires. Now step back to your own perspective and view this person from the outside. This person is not the true source of your happiness. This can only come from within your own mind. Now bring to mind someone who you have difficulties with. Someone perhaps that you even dislike. Again, picture them very clearly in front of you. And again, shift your perspective and be this person from the inside, experiencing their own hopes and fears. They are just like yourself, wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. And again, shift your perspective back to yourself and view this person from the outside. This person is not the true source of your anxiety or distress. This can only come from within your own mind. So realize that there is nothing inherent in the stranger, the loved one, or the difficult person that makes them that way. Circumstances change, and they can easily move from one category to another. The stranger can become a friend. A friend can become someone who we dislike, and someone who dislike can become a friend. shifting circumstances bring us together and cause us to part. And recognize that everyone is fundamentally like yourself in wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. And then arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if everyone had equanimity, free from attachment to friends, free of apathy or indifference to strangers, and free of hostility, anger, or hatred towards difficult people. There's one more thing I'd like to talk about, the four immeasurables, before we go for another break. And that is this idea of near enemy. Each of these four immeasurables has something which seems to be it, but actually it's the opposite. And this is what's called near enemy. A far enemy is someone or something that is obviously the enemy, the opposite. A near enemy is something that looks like that thing, but actually is completely opposite. And we've come across a couple of these already. And fortunately, within these four immeasurables, one of the other immeasurables can help us to overcome the near enemy of that particular quality. So the near enemy of loving-kindness, of course, is attachment. And what can help us to overcome attachment, to make our loving-kindness more pure, is reflecting on this point here of equanimity. Equanimity also has a near enemy. So remember, equanimity is this equal attitude towards others. It's this sense of closeness to everyone. But something that seems to be equanimity but is not is the mind of indifference. We can be equally indifferent to everyone. And that feels like we're being have equanimity, but we're not. It's complete indifference. So if we find that our equanimity is simply sliding into being indifferent, then we can focus and cultivate compassion. Because with compassion, we can really have a close connection, a close empathy with others. It would be hard to be indifferent if we cultivated or focused on compassion.
But sometimes compassion also can slide into what's called like despair or depression. The compassion can become this overwhelming sense of hopelessness or despair. If that happens, then we can cultivate or focus on empathetic joy. It's really focused on the qualities, the virtues and good fortunes of ourselves and others to help balance, to help overcome this sort of hopelessness or despair. And this rejoicing in our own and others' virtues and good qualities and so forth can also slide into some just frivolous rejoicing in meaningless things. And so if our empathetic joy is becoming rather frivolous and meaningless, this rejoicing, then we can focus on loving kindness, on the wish for ourselves and others to find that genuine happiness. So in this way, each of these four immeasurables has something that is easy to slide into, what's called the near enemy, and then we can use one of the other four immeasurables to help us to overcome that. So they're really supporting each other. Any questions about any of this before we take another short break? On this one?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go again. So loving kindness, of course, is the wish for ourselves and others to have happiness. And it's easy for that to get mixed up or slide into simply attachment. So attachment, you know, we talked about that sometimes attachment seems to be loving kindness, but it's not actually. It's actually the opposite. So if our loving kindness is being polluted or degenerating simply into attachment, then what's helpful is to reflect on equanimity. If we reflect on equanimity, that we're all equal in wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering, this can help us to overcome this attachment and thereby keep our loving kindness more pure. Within equanimity, this is a sense of impartiality, but it's a sense of closeness to everyone. But this can also be polluted or degenerate into a sense of equal indifference to everyone, this distance from everyone. So if our equanimity is degenerating or being polluted and being turning into this equal indifference or distance from everyone, then we can reflect on compassion, to see everyone suffering and the wish for them to be free of suffering. And that compassion can help us to then have that sense of closeness and to stop us having this sense of distance from everyone. But our compassion also can slide into this sort of hopelessness or despair that it can overwhelm it because we are focusing so much on suffering. So then the compassion can sort of slide into this desperation or hopelessness or depression. If that is happening, then we can reflect on empathetic joy. Empathetic joy is a focus on the positive side, on the rejoicing in our own and others' virtues and good fortune. So to help avoid that sliding into despair. But this rejoicing in our own and others' virtues can also degenerate into rejoicing into meaningless things. Not into virtues, just meaningless things. So our rejoicing can become rather frivolous or meaningless. If that rejoicing is turning into being more frivolous, meaningless, then we can reflect on loving kindness, the wish for ourselves and others to have this genuine happiness. And so that can help make sure that the empathetic joy doesn't degenerate into this frivolous rejoicing. So that's how each one of them can help each other. Just rejoicing in meaningless things, rejoicing in just simple pleasure, you know, rejoicing in that we've won $1 million or something, you know, Sorry? Laughter yoga. Yeah. Well, it depends what the underlying thing is with that laughter. I mean, laughter in terms of it focusing on the positive and rejoicing in that, that's okay, that's fine. But laughing at the expense of others, you know, that might be not so good, you know. You know, maybe here also rejoicing in, you know, someone else is having some misfortune. That might be not a good thing to rejoice in, you know. Everything. Yeah, I mean, of course, all of these, we're talking about developing inner qualities. And it's the inner qualities that are going to give us the happiness that we seek. It's not something out there. So, yes, of course, these are talking about inner qualities. So, sort of implicit in that is we're talking about a genuine happiness of being in harmony with reality, of developing these positive qualities. So, of course, this is diametrically opposite to seeing happiness as being out there.
Okay, let's take another short break and then we'll come back at 5:15 and we'll go back into then the mindfulness training and again observing our mind. So hopefully our mind is becoming now pure and still and pristine, is that true? Not quite yet. A little bit more work to do? Okay.